This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. You are listening to Love in the 21st Century on every Tuesday from 5 to 6 p.m., hosted by Tamara Wickma. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connections with humanity. One-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, one-third compassion training. And tonight will be the last night that we're going to be in our series on love stories. And tonight, anybody that's been following us and listening to the different love stories, we've definitely ranged on talking about what kind of love stories, from ending relationships to beginning relationships to falling in love to internet dating. And there's just all types of ways to tell love stories, with the question always being, if you were asked to tell a love story, what would it be? Who would be the star? What would it be about? Would it be about a person? And so I have the pleasure so much tonight to be talking with two wonderful women that are going to be talking about a calling that they have, something, a different type of love story, a love story that involves following a dream and a desire to live life the way they want to and with beautiful Mother Earth. So please stay tuned. If you have something to add to the conversation, as always, this is a call-in radio show. The number is 895-1114. That will get you on the air. We love to hear what you have to say and what you have to add to the conversation. The number is 895-1114. Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by one of Chico's newest restaurants, Rallo's West. Rallo's West at 234 West 3rd Street in the heart of downtown. Rallo's West offers small and large plates, Maryland-style shrimp, blue crab cakes, a wine bar, charcuterie, and artisanal cheeses. Rallo's West is open from 5 till 9 p.m. until 10 on Friday and Saturday. For more information, visit them on Facebook or by calling 636-4468.
My pine whistler sparrow hides on Mr. Papa. My pine whistler sparrow, my moon blister mama. My jaw clencher spirit, mouth ghost dancer mama. My vein braider, thousand year bone burner mama. My tongue twister, thousand wrong dantellers mama. Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Love in the 21st Century Love Stories. In our last segment, this is Tamara, and I am here with two wonderful women. One that we will be speaking with first, Nadia Zoller, traditional Western herbalist. She is here sharing her particular love story with the plants. She is a nurse. She does nourishing wellness and wholeness with herbs and nutrition. She creates flower essences for emotional wellness. She also does personal consultations and classes. She's also now a massage therapist, and I'm so blessed to have her in my life and sharing her wonderful knowledge with me on a regular basis. So I'm so happy that you're here in the studio tonight, Nadia.
Thank you, Tamara. It's such a joy to be with you in life.
Yay. Always.
You're such a weaver of spirit and life, and invite me to lots of wonderful places. So thank you for inviting me here.
Yes, thank you so much. And we were briefly talking before we got on the air about love stories and just ways that you've shared with me your captivation with the plants. And I think that it's so magical, because we so often think about love stories, as I was mentioning, in the perspective of romance, which is great and it's important and it's a big part. But part of the purpose of this show is to craft a larger view of love and to look at you from a larger lens, that it's really all the things we do, in a way, all the things that come into our life. And so naturally, the way that you speak about your relationship to the plants, it seemed like a perfect fit to me that you would be sharing your love story with plants.
Yeah. I love the plants, and they love me, and they love everyone. You know, we can breathe because of the trees, so.
Yes, it's such a perfect, you know, symbiotic relationship. So I was hoping that maybe you could start with where your sort of love story begins, with where you first fell in love with plants, or, you know, that initial relationship began.
Yeah. I think, you know, it began first as a child, just being so fascinated by nature, and just everything was so alive to me, and understanding that concept of like, oh, we breathe because of the trees exhaling, you know, the carbon dioxide, carbon, you know, oxygen relationship. And that was fascinating to me. And then as an adult, I had, you know, we go through life and things happen to us. And really what brought me home after some hard times was just sipping a cup of like chamomile tea, and just how nourishing that felt. And so that those really gentle plants really brought me into a perspective of like, oh wow, like I don't have to get a hug from a human to feel like I'm being hugged from the inside out. Like, that's fascinating. And then it grew from there.
How beautiful. So that support that you're talking about, like that real tangible support that you felt through the plants, through nourishing your body, that is definitely a unique perspective of looking at the world of nourishment.
Yeah. It's a really wide, wild world when we open our eyes to seeing love and seeing life in everything and everywhere. And such a gift to be finding teachers along my way that recognize that and teach me even more and more ways to be in relationship and relating to the natural world.
Yeah, so amazing. So that story that you were just telling, though, about the chamomile tea, like where was that in your life? Like, what time, how old were you?
I was about 21, 22, and was really moving through a hard time and felt kind of alone in a transition period. And that was just something that was really constant and sort of there for me and never asked anything of me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you would say that kind of marked the beginning of this more in-depth relationship that you're on now with the plants?
Yeah, they were kind of like a key to a doorway. Mm-hmm. You know, their profound subtlety in healing came into my life at a time when I was really cracking open to a more full version of myself. And then it just got me curious, like, oh, wow, these are really profound. Like, who else is talking about these? Who else is drinking these things and, like, interested in, like, all these, you know, roots and berries and leaves and things? And so they really branched out into meeting other people and then studying it and, like, finding teachers. So from there, I studied from just from books and in my own kitchen. And I think that's some of the best ways to study anything, is just be with it, with yourself, and like build a relationship in your own heart. And then from there, I studied with some teachers in Minnesota, one being Matthew Wood, who's pretty well known, has some books around, and Lise Wolf. And then came out, I heard a segment on KPFA, which is the a similar version of this station in Berkeley. They have a sweet radio slot on Thursdays called the Herbal Highway. Mm. And so I was listening to that in Minnesota online and heard this little segment about the Ohlone Herbal Center in Berkeley and had an apprenticeship program. So that was a little key cross-country to me to really be like, oh, okay, this is something I want to take seriously, and something, this is such a gift that the plants have brought to me that I would love to bring to others.
Mm-hmm.
And that started my serious inquiry and study with the plants.
How beautiful. I want to go back to something you said, which was the building of relationship of the with the plants in your kitchen. And so did you find that certain plants were calling to you in terms of like the ones that you were initially first starting to work with?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It's like a lot of teachers sort of validate this. And it has been validated so many times in my own life that the plants find you, you know, like, sort of when I teach, I often say, what is your favorite spice? Mm-hmm. You know, what spice is in your favorite dish that your grandma made?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what did your mom, what type of tea did she pour for you when you had a bellyache? These plants really like weave themselves into our lives, even if we're not paying attention.
Right.
So some of those plants found me in my own kitchen and have really been deep allies for me through the years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How beautiful. So will you talk a little bit more about what that term that you just used, allies, mm-hmm. like what does that mean to you in reference to working with the plants?
Yeah. An ally is, to me, an ally is someone who will just show up, and they show up fully as themselves in a respect and how can I help you way. So an ally could be a human, an ally could be a plant, an ally could be, you know, your dog. It's this, mm-hmm. This way of showing up to one another. And so a plant being an ally to me is, how would I describe that? Like, you know, this chamomile, for example, like it showed up in my life and really when I needed it, even though I didn't know how to ask for it,
mm-hmm.
it saw that I could be helped by it, and it found me and I found it. And then over time, I was able to recognize it and acknowledge it and thank it,
mm-hmm.
and then build a relationship consciously with it. So to me, that's an ally, is something that will just show up and doesn't ask anything of you and knows that you're really perfect just as you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How beautiful. Can you talk a bit more about the different plants that you do consider allies and maybe some of their just emotional but also their nutritive benefits of being allies of yours?
Yeah, and I you posed that question to me earlier, and I was just like, of all the plants that I have relationships with now, I was like, who am I going to talk about?
Right.
And this beautiful show that you have on love, which is such a, I just love your question about love being something that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Love is active. Love is a verb. It's also a state of being.
Mm-hmm.
Love isn't something that you have or don't have. Love is always. And so I was thinking about these plants and like, I love them all. But
we only have so much time.
I know, we only have so much time. So some plants I did think of were, one that's a really just like beautiful ally to work with for myself and for anyone who's listening is roses. And, you know, if we think about our culture and like roses are the like the gift of love. It's like how you show love to someone, you bring roses to like your beloved, or these all these romantic stories all the way back through Shakespeare and like in cross-culturally. But roses have just some wonderful, really gentle healing qualities. Folks of all ages can work with roses, and you can work with the rose petals. They're really high in minerals and nutritive, and they're slightly astringent, so they help beautify the skin and tonify the digestive system. And the rose hips are really high in vitamin C, so they're great like cough, cold, flu remedy. And you know, the leaves are astringent, so there's all these different parts of the same plant that we can learn to be in love with. And the energetics of a rose is that it's got thorns and like the most beautiful voluptuous flower, and you know, you can't just come in and take a rose, you'll get pricked. So roses help us learn about love with healthy boundaries. Like, you can come and smell me and I'll share my beauty with you, but like, I am me and you are you, and we need to respect each other and approach each other in a gentle, like, respectful manner. So if you're, you know, working on love or self-love, roses are a great plant to work with, to tune into that. That's just one of many.
Yeah, so great. Sorry for anybody out there that was listening to me to have some throat challenges there. Maybe that vitamin C was really calling out to me.
Yeah,
in the roses. But interestingly, I actually bought a rose yesterday for my dad. So yesterday was the anniversary of my grandmother's death. And so I bought him, knowing that roses sort of symbolize that unconditional love. Mm-hmm. I bought him a rose bush so that he could plant it and think of his mother.
So beautiful. Yeah. And roses grow in so many climates. Like, I gave my mom a rose bush for Mother's Day a couple years ago instead of buying her cut flowers, because I knew it would come back every year.
Mm-hmm. That's the way to go. Planted flowers versus flowers that you can watch grow for a little while. Mm-hmm. Those are the best. So is there any other ones, any other plants that are calling to you that want to be spoken about right now in this moment?
I think, yeah, there's one plant that's a little bit more unusual that, you know, it just wants to be spoken about, is this plant that I personally don't work with internally. I work with the flower essence, which is not working with the tea or any physical part of the plant, because parts of it are poisonous, so you have to be very careful. But I just have this deep love affair with this plant. Like, I grow it, and every time I see it, I feel really good, and I like my heart sort of flutters. And like when I sit next to it and meditate, we'll share some deep insights with me. And this plant is called Datura, and it grows wild in India and in like more dry, deserty conditions of like Mexico and some parts of the southeast and southwest. But you can grow it up here. And you know, do your research before you grow it, and I highly recommend not taking it in. But it's this beautiful plant, and it has just the most gorgeous white trumpet flowers that face the sun. They bloom about once a year, and it's fascinating to talk to anyone else about my love affair with this plant. It's like as if a beloved friend. Mm-hmm. You know, I've grown it for a few years. I've seen its changes over the seasons, like how it grows as a plant. It's sort of kept me in check by asking me to tend to it. So I get to share my love by like it reminding me like it'll look sad if I don't tend to it. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a friend. We get sad when we're apart from each other. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love the plants and the ways that they teach me. And I think I'll share a small story about another plant is, mm-hmm. A redwood tree. I love them so much. And, let's see, I was going through some heartbreak. I was going through a breakup of a romantic person partnership, and was just really feeling so much in my heart, feeling so many feelings, and like feeling really separate, and I went on a hike, and one of my old teachers, Rosemary Gladstar, who you can find online, she's phenomenal for anyone who's interested in plants, look her up. But she told this story about going through a divorce and how she would go running every day to like keep herself motivated and like sort of run out her frustration. And she would run to this particular tree and she would just sit under the tree and like cry and get out her tears. And then she would run back and feel good. And kind of in a similar way, I would go walk to this one redwood tree. It was huge mama redwood. And I just had all these tears and I felt called to stand up next to the tree with my back, my spine against it, as if my spine was the redwood and could mm-hmm. look out and was that old. And the tree said to me, it just said, like, you know, baby girl, your heart is too big to ask any one person to hold. Mm. Like, love is everywhere. You are love. You can't ask one person to hold all of your heart. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to hold it and share it with everyone. You can't ask just one person. So it was really healing in that moment. It wasn't what I wanted to hear, you know, at the moment, but it was a key. It was medicine for me. And mm-hmm. so I didn't even need to take in the plant to receive its medicinal qualities. Mm-hmm. So that's one way of being in love with plants, is just tending to them and being near them.
And waiting for those insights to come through. Would you say that that's an experience that you have with the plants that you're in relationship with, that they sort of are communicating some sort of insight to you on a semi-regular basis?
Yeah, they do. It's almost like a radio station, you mm-hmm. know, like the earth is communicating on its own energetic frequency all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's not a good or bad that we can't hear it if you can't hear it. It just, once you tune in, you're kind of like, oh, wow, like there's a lot going on here. Mm-hmm. And so once I actively, consciously tuned in and quieted my mind, you know, years ago when I was working with plants and first did like a plant meditation, I think it was with, you know, chamomile or something. It was some practice that we would do in herb school. And you can get a lot of insights with just sitting with a plant, you know, and tuning into their radio station, which mm-hmm. is very subtle. It's a very subtle, quiet, heart-centered space.
Mm. Do you remember some of the insights that you received from the chamomile?
Yeah, there's one way, if you're not interested in meditating with a plant, is to look at old folklore. Mm. There's some really beautiful insights you can find in old folklore cross-culturally about, there's always plants woven in because, you know, before modern technology, like the earth was our technology. And so in these old folklores, you'll find, especially folklore about evergreens, like trees, there's a lot of deep wisdom there. But one of the folklores about chamomile is that in Germany, which is a place that it grows wild, is that it's the herb of destiny. Mm. And it gets that name because they would say, if you had a lot going on in your mind and you couldn't figure out your future, if you were like, you know, in a crunchy time or something, they would just say, go lay in a bed of chamomile and your destiny will come to you. And really what's going on is, like, when you are walking on wild chamomile, it's so beautiful, and you're stepping on it, and it releases its volatile oils, and you lay down, it'll make you fall asleep. It's a very calming plant, and if you're resting and you're tapping into what, you know, your future holds, mm-hmm. you might fall asleep, and then your destiny might come in dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one story about chamomile that I find really true, because one of the first times that I intentionally meditated with it before bed, I had some pretty wild dreams.
Mm-hmm.
They were very clear.
Mm, what was to come for you?
Yeah.
How amazing. So beautiful. I love listening to you and the way you describe plants and your relationship to them and the folklore. I feel inspired to go look up more folklore.
Yeah, it's everywhere. Every culture, you know, we are, you know, and I love the old saying that we are actually, you know, we are what we eat. That's an old saying that mm-hmm. a lot of people know, but like literally we are what we eat.
Literally,
because it makes, you know, like the digestive process, blah, 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 chemistry. Right. But with the plants, it's like that. It's the physiological, we are the plants. Mm-hmm. And energetically, like when you take in a plant, when you sip the tea, you're also like taking in its story, its story of its medicine that it carries. So like, I just love the plants so much.
Right. So if you're feeling inspired from this conversation and you there's any particular plants that are calling to you, like Dantio was saying, ones that have grown in your, for me, like have grown in my mother's garden or that your parents cooked with or just something that's always in your cupboard, that's a great place to just start and start to develop more of a relationship. Like, what is the folklore around it? What is the story? It sounds like what you just said, it's, they're all out there.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's what you said, asking, you know, looking in your kitchen cupboard. And I think it's really important nowadays to really honor and try to carry on some of our folk traditions of our elders.
Mm-hmm.
And so asking your whatever relatives that you have, is the oldest relatives that you have, asking them like what was their favorite spice as a child or like what was their favorite tea.
Mm-hmm.
And you can start tracing back your lineage of like what plants your peoples carried to bring you here, literally, because these plants kept us well,
right?
And kept your parents well so that you could come here
right
now today.
Yeah, such a great point. Like before, Western medicine was such like a common thing, then people were using herbal medicines all the time. So yeah, like you said, getting here and staying well,
mm-hmm.
it was all based on those plants. Which plants were they?
Mm-hmm.
It's a great homework assignment for anybody that feels so desirous. I am inspired, most definitely. And I definitely wanted to let people know that if how to get a hold of you if they're interested in just learning more about what you do, because you do do individual consultations, you sell products, you are gearing up to do some classes here in Chico. So I want to let people know how to get a hold of you. And we'd love to have you on again when you have those classes all ready and going.
Yeah, thank you. Right now, the most effective way to get a hold of me is matriarchusapothecary@gmail.com. And that's a long one to spell out on the air.
We can try that. We can spell it really slowly.
We can spell it out.
Okay.
We'll hand it. It's MATRIARIKAS, Matriarchus, honoring the wisdom of the Great Mother. That's what that means. It's Matriarchus, and then Apothecary, APOTHECARY, @gmail.com.
Great. Thank you so much, Nadia, and for sharing your love with the plants and just being so alive in that process.
Thank you so much to everyone out there listening. I hope that this blesses you well. And thank you, Tamara, for hosting me. And I'm so excited to hear who's next.
Yes, my pleasure to have you on, Nadia. And we're going to take a short break here before we jump into talking with Mia Krakowski about crested loam designs and the love of natural building. So we're staying with our love story theme, and we are talking about love of the planet, love of Mother Earth, love of the other in a very different sort of way. We've been talking a lot about love stories, but I hope through listening to Nadia, you have been inspired to think about your love story in a different way, that love stories are about more than just like the romantic love. And here in the coming weeks, we'll have series talking about different types of love. So stay tuned for that. We will be talking with Mia quite soon. And remember, this is a call-in show. Feel free to call in, 895-1114. And we're going to hear some music from
Mahalia Jackson.
Yeah, yeah. Put a rainbow in the sky.
Rainbowed in the sky, rainbowed in the sky. Rainbowed in the sky, oh God, put rainbowed in the sky, rainbowed in the sky, rainbowed in the sky. It looked like the sun wasn't gonna shine anymore. Oh God, And the day was dark. God put a rainbow in the sky. Oh, cheer, God, he put a rainbow in the sky. Oh, yeah, God, he put a rainbow in the sky.
Some beautiful words from Mahalia Jackson, put a rainbow in the sky. God put a rainbow in the sky. I love rainbows, so that's why I felt really good about playing that song, because I think rainbows should be every day. And we are back here, Love in the 21st Century. I'm Tamara. We were just talking with Nadia Zoller about the love of the plants. We've been talking about love stories for the last few weeks. This is our last week talking about love stories. And we're going to finish it out talking about another type of love story that is a unique love story. This is a love for natural building. And as I was mentioning previously, this show aims to broaden the conversation around what love is. You know, we talk about love a lot in the context of relationships, family, loved ones, partnerships, friends, but we don't necessarily talk about the love of what we do. Maybe that's because we don't always love what we do, but I'd like to start that conversation more so that it becomes a thought in our mind that it's possible to be doing work and contributing to the world in a way that is sharing our deep love. Because imagine a world where everybody was just doing what they loved. Be a whole lot of love we'd be feeling, wouldn't it? So, thank you so much, Mia, for joining me.
Thank you, Tamara. I'm excited to be here and would love to tell my love story, I guess.
Yeah, love to tell the love story. Absolutely. So, Mia is the founder and creator of Crested Loam Designs, and we're going to be talking about an upcoming workshop here soon. But first, I want to just talk about you, Mia, and your love for natural building. So as we were talking with Nadia, it's the same sort of concept. When you think of your love story and where it began with, you know, natural building, where would it begin?
So I had been attending Butte College back in 2009 and had started my search for, I guess, that thing, you know, mm-hmm. that we do when we're young and we're trying to figure it out. And I was studying drafting and design, interior design and architecture, and then doing a lot of sculpture and ceramic work on just for pleasure, basically. And I think I just couldn't really find myself fitting into the natural or the building realm as it is, as the construct that we have in our culture so far, mm-hmm. with architecture and things like that. I was really inspired by all the things that you could do on a grander scale and like living inside these beautiful creations that we can make. Mm-hmm. But then I was also unsure of how I would fit in when I have kind of some heart truths around being good to the earth and not taking so much, or like taking without like recognition of what we're taking. Mm-hmm. And that was also a lot of what I learned at Butte College, because they have a really great sustainability like force behind them, and just wanted to share that. And so I kind of started there, and a friend of mine had gone on a trip and learned about earth benches, which is kind of an ode to the trash in the world, and then kind of using that trash as a way to build, basically recycling it so it doesn't go into the landfill, and you make bottle bricks, which are just, you know, old plastic bottles filled with thin plastic trash, and you compact them really tightly, and then they're used as a brick form. And then over top of that, you use a natural material such as cob, which is a mix of sand, straw, and clay. And you can build walls and benches. And there was just this thing going around for a couple of years, kind of drawing attention to the amount of garbage going into landfills and then trying to reuse it in a more conscious way, or more beneficial way, I guess, because all the trash is already there.
Mm-hmm.
So we built an earth bench out of Butte College. It's still there, thank goodness.
Mm-hmm. And nice.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that you might go a little more in depth on what you talked about as your heart truths and how they didn't necessarily match up with your pursuit in the architectural world. And yeah, could you just maybe illuminate what you mean by heart truths and what those are?
Mm-hmm. I guess I had spent a lot of time also taking courses in like social studies and kind of environmental studies as well, just out of curiosity with no real intention of like going into any sort of career in that realm. But I learned a lot about stored energy and production of products and the amount of destruction that we kind of do haphazardly when it comes to like getting materials to create the world around us.
Mm-hmm.
And I had in the future, actually not too long ago, I had done a little building project out in Utah, and we had to use some materials that were up to code for the county on a naturally built home. And a lot of those up to code products are pretty toxic products, but it's like a requirement under the county to, you know, help with sealing a window or these things, which is somewhat understandable. And then there's also other avenues that you can take to do the same sealing of that window. But we like have these structures and rules, and it's also holding true and holding tight to these old ideals and ideas about how things need to be done around building.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to break the mold around building and building codes with natural materials, even though humans have been building with natural materials before any of these other products came along.
Before Home Depot and Lowe's was ever around where we could go and buy these fabricated materials.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you talked a little bit about the consumption nature of our society, and it just reminded me about going to the dump yesterday. So I went, I paid a visit to the dump, and my friend that was with me called it the pyramid of consumption. Mm-hmm. And it's the largest man-made structure from Sacramento to Oregon border, which, I mean, in theory, his explanation makes sense, because Chico and the surrounding areas is probably the largest populace between those two places. Maybe not. I mean, Redding's pretty big, so
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know how factual this information is, but mm-hmm. The point being that we don't often think about our consumption and where it goes, and like the fact that like once it leaves the front of our house or, you know, our trash can, if we're not the ones that are really tending to that, what happens? And so I'm so happy that you're bringing that part of the awareness, you know, to your heart. Like if you really think about what our products are doing, what we are creating, building with, or what we're consuming and where those things go, it might make your opinion a little different on what you want to invest your time in. And so you saw that in your studies when you were like kind of trying to weave your road, as you were saying, like, okay, here you are in the architecture world but it's wanting you to do something that isn't necessarily feeling true for you.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So what came next? I know that you did do some studying. Something led you somewhere else to do a little bit more studying in the natural building world.
Yeah, I through the same friend that had done the Earth Bench out at Butte College, I had heard about this group of women up in Canada. They're outside of or off the coast of British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And they're called the Mud Girls Natural Building Collective. It's a collective of about 20 women that come together a few at a time and hold workshops on people's property. And so you can like pay to join them and be a part of their workshops, and they have a really reasonable rate. Mm-hmm. That was another thing that I ran into with a lot of the natural building projects and sign-ups that you can do here in the States. They're a lot more expensive, and mm-hmm. so it was going to make it harder for me to access those goals mm-hmm. if I was to try to do it here.
Right.
So I went to Canada for a month, and we did about 150 square foot, two-story home.
Wow.
With 25 people.
Wow, that's big.
Yeah, and we did it in 2 weeks.
That is so impressive.
Yeah, it was really amazing. And just the amount of community that was built just by building something for like this young couple that was living on this farm there.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge thing that I didn't expect when it came to natural building.
You right.
know? I think that kind of called to a bigger part of me that I didn't really know it would, like, going down this natural building road would lead me into and kind of pull the curtain back on, like, my desire to hold space for community and, mm-hmm. like, keep community really strong, and then having those projects that you do together because they can get done faster,
right?
With the intention of like supporting part of your community, a few members of your community, and then getting to know new people or rekindling relationships with old friends that you hadn't seen in a while. You know, it was so much more than just building this home, you
right.
know. I think that's what, like, topped it off for me as far as, like, the love that I truly felt mm-hmm. once I got up there and was like, wow, so much more to natural building than I could even imagine.
Right. And yeah. So that relationship building part, that bringing community together, was there an experience that, like, really marked that for you, that was really memorable?
I think it was just the month that I was up in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had a 2-week stint on the house that we built, and then there was a week break, and then another week of doing finishes, mm-hmm. like earthen floors, natural plasters and paints. And that week in between, where, you know, I had driven up there in a little Subaru and didn't know where to go or, you know, anything like that. And I had, you know, built this community with these people over the last 2 weeks. And some of them were locals. And mm-hmm. they, like, opened their homes. I mean, I got to stay in a teepee for the week and have a bicycle to ride. And then just, like, connect with those locals over the next week. And
mm-hmm.
They have a lot of similar, like, we were on Salt Spring Island. And the island is very similar in some respect to a lot of little things about California as far as consciousness around
mm-hmm.
trying to be good to the planet and be good to people. And
right.
that's a very broad statement, but I know that I've seen little things like that in California mm-hmm. as well. And so it's even more amplified there because it's a smaller community.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have less outside influence and a stronger interior to, like, create this, I don't want to say, but utopia kind of thing where
right.
you are supported and being supportive at the same time. And mm-hmm. I just really felt that. And if I hadn't gone to, you know, build a house,
right,
those connections and all that care and all that would have never, you know, come into mind for me, I think.
Right. And so you were spending all day with these folks for those first 2 weeks when you were building, and then that, you know, built that pseudo feel of community, because you have to rely on each other while you're building. And then in that process, so you're spending all this time together, you actually had an opportunity to build some substantial lasting relationships, it sounds
mm-hmm.
like.
Mm-hmm.
So beautiful.
Mm-hmm. That's so good.
That sets the goal of life, right? Is to do work that we love and build relationships with people that we like
mm-hmm.
and want to spend time with. You know, not necessarily. I mean, I'm sure everyone has that experience of not having that world in work, but like how that is really an ideal that we really all strive for, of wanting to, and to be real, just be like real people, like who we really are in our everyday life, not the person we have to be when we put on a certain mm-hmm. uniform or, you know, go to a certain job place.
Mm-hmm.
So, such a great story to share. We do have an amazing opportunity that is quite similar, much smaller, to what you experienced. Would you mind talking a bit about that?
Yeah, of course. Actually, it's starting this coming Thursday. It's going to be a 4-day first leg of our 2-weekend workshop that we're holding in Chapman Town. It's called Building Community While Learning Natural Building. And it starts from 9 a.m. and it goes till 3 p.m. And we have like a half an hour lunch break. We're going to do meet and greets in the morning. It's going to be pretty relaxed. And the first leg is going to be the whole countertop side of the outdoor kitchen. And if you're interested in joining us, which we would love to see you there,
mm-hmm.
as many hands that show up make much more light work and more smiles and,
right,
you know. So if you would love to join us, the phone number to reach us at would be 530-520-6928. And you can email us, if you're curious as well, at livetrue530@gmail.com.
Perfect. And so yeah, that's 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And the first 3 days will be starting at 9 o'clock and going till 3. And you're also able to just attend one day. So if you're not, if you're working Monday through Friday, or if you have prior engagements for the weekend, whatever it is, like, you're welcome to call us and let us know if you'd like to just attend part of the workshop, just to mm-hmm. kind of get an idea, meet Mia, and hear about other workshops that will be coming up in the future.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a Facebook user, you can check it out on the internet on Facebook with that name, Building Community While Learning Natural Building. So there are many ways to get more information. And as Mia was saying, direct line is 530-520-6928. And just let us know that you're calling about natural building and that you want to learn more about it. There's potential for scholarships and work trade as well, because there is a fee for the workshop, but it's definitely negotiable. So we want to see people there, hands mm-hmm. getting dirty, building community in Chapman Town. That's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's a, as Mia said, a 2-leg part of a outdoor kitchen that will be used for community use. So yeah, I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
Mm-hmm.
So Miss Mia, we have a few more minutes, and I'm hoping that maybe you will share with us sort of who, you know, who or what, when you were younger, first started to inspire you to get out there and get dirty, because being a woman, mm-hmm. it tends to be less inclined for women to get dirty. I don't know if you noticed that. I don't know if mm-hmm. you experienced that. Maybe you didn't experience that. But I think it's kind of a social generality, we can say, that women are, when women are girls, like they are meant to be doing certain things, and when men are boys, they are, you know, it's okay for them to do a whole range of things with exception to certain things that are womanly. So so that being said, I'm just curious, like, where you found yourself. I know you mentioned earlier that your relationship with ceramics definitely played a part in getting you to your natural building, but I'm just curious where that maybe started for you when you were younger, if there was a particular mentor, a teacher, your parents' experience that led you to be really enjoying getting dirty.
Well, let me think. You know, I guess I'm one of many that are still in this age range that didn't really have a lot of technology growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in the Eastern Sierras and 10 miles from any town. And so I spent a lot of time outside already. And with neighbors being outside off a dirt road in the middle of the woods. So I think my affinity for just being outside and kind of barefoot and connected to the planet in a playful way and then also in an exploratory way started because of maybe just because there was nothing else I could do, you know, being out in the woods with no other things to kind of distract you
mm-hmm.
from just what's around you. And so...
Yeah, so...
I could say it started there, probably.
Right, so just being... Maybe growing up in a more rural place where mm-hmm. that is sort of more the invitation to, mm-hmm. to be outdoors. And I'm curious about your experience going to Mud Girls. So that would be an all-women's
mm-hmm.
experience. And just... anything that was sort of memorable for you in that experience, and memorable, I mean, in the sense of like kind of like building, like we'll call like a girl gang of mud builders, and like just the empowerment that it might feel, and if that was more like a subversive sort of feeling, or if that was something that was maybe more overtly like, yeah, we're women and we're building with mud, like how was that experience for you?
I would, I'm really glad that you brought that up because I think it was my first experience doing natural building, like in person with other people aside from the bottle brick bench or the earth bench that we did in Butte. And the fact that it was all women and they all came together playing different roles and shared all of the responsibility equally and were malleable as far as like during this workshop, one woman would run the workshop and then, you know, some of the other women would play different roles as far as daycare or food prep or maybe the woodworking and things like that. Everybody kind of worked together instead of having this hierarchical kind of like that's the boss and then these are the people that work for the boss feeling. And it did, and I still run into those moments where I am a woman and I am trying to get materials in a more male-driven job and a male-driven kind of world
mm-hmm.
and have had confrontation or lack of respect to some degree when I... you know, need what I need for my project and I come up against some men that don't take me seriously, you mm-hmm. know. And I hadn't really recognized that before I'd gone up there or, you know, because I hadn't really tapped into it at all. But after, like, getting all this empowerment by working with a bunch of women and seeing how they worked so well together and collectively, you know, this, like, community that... has one, you know, they come together to make one thing happen, and it's also like reunion for all of them to come together.
Right.
It definitely, they didn't like outrightly say like, oh, we're a bunch of women, you know, building, kicking butt kind of thing, but
right.
I definitely felt that when, and you know, the collective is open to male and female attendees. It's not just
okay.
for women.
Mm-hmm.
And they really encourage mothers and fathers with children to come and, like, bring their kids and stuff like that because it is such a communal-driven kind of work.
Right.
But to see all these beautiful older women that just know what they love doing and doing it, you know, and then really falling... for the whole idea of natural building and the community and everything was just, I think the pinnacle for me to be like, this is what I'm, you know, gonna do. And I felt strength in that
mm-hmm.
and being a woman in that realm.
Beautiful. And so you sort of touched on it a bit, but so there was multi-generational feeling when you were there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. There was, it was so cool. There were so many babies. And yeah, there would be like a mug girl or two that would cook us food three times a day. And then there would be one or two mud girls there for daycare. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really beautiful, opening up the workshops to people that feel like they can't go because they have little ones. Mm-hmm. They were super accommodating to that. And then that was also open to us as like attendees to join and like help out with the kids and help out with cooking. And so all the mud girls kind of knew the steps that needed to be done, but we were freely like able to join in on everything, and it did really end up feeling like a family. Mm-hmm. Where you're aiding or taking care of each other from infant to like food into mouth kind of thing and everything in between.
How beautiful. What an amazing experience. Of course you would fall in love. Building community, getting dirty, making lifelong relationships. Yeah, it sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're interested in kind of getting a brief experience in that, but at the same time maybe building community and building friends that you're going to have for a long time here in Chapmantown, here in Chico, we have a workshop that's coming up starting Thursday at 9 o'clock, and you can get a hold of us by
calling 530-520-6928.
Awesome. So also the livetrue530@gmail.com. Thank you so much, Mia, for taking the time to join me today.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for letting me get out here and talk about our project together coming up and just kind of touch on the feelings of natural building and community. And beautiful.
What a beautiful love story. Thank you, Nadia, again, for being on the air. And Mia, beautiful love stories. Stay tuned for Ecotopia, talking about the earth. Tuesdays from 6 to 7, Stephen and Susan Chudy. They discuss environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. EcoTalk, it's your local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health of our planet.
Hey guys, Will Durst here with a few choice words on last Monday's first presidential debate at New York's Hofstra University. 84 million Americans reportedly tuned in, but alas, Donald Trump did not seem to be among them. Post-debate polls show that 54% of respondents thought Hillary Clinton won, 24% thought Donald Trump was the winner, and 22% either had no opinion or looked at the questioner like they were crazy for even asking. Afterwards, Trump went on an oblivion tour to say that everyone told him he had won the debate by huge margins, presumably the same people who tell him he has the best temperament in the history of presidential elections, damn it. It's unbelievable, his temperament. Ask Sean Hannity. Ask Sean Connery. His temperament is better than perfect. His temperament is 98.7 degrees. He has a note from Dr. Oz and Sean Hannity about his incredible temperament. The knock against Hillary is that she was too well-prepared and often looked like an escaped animatron from Disney's Hall of Presidents whose face got frozen while laughing. But that was written off as jealous sniping from the Trump cap solely because the former Secretary of State was able to string words together into actual sentences with subjects and predicates and points. You know, in a presidential sort of manner. After starting strong, Trump wound down like a cheap watch, which has to be especially galling for a guy who claims his opponent is not qualified to be president because of her lack of stamina. Perhaps he thought the debate was being judged on time of possession, which would have explained his rambling and sputtering and eventually muttering something about how the DNC might have been hacked by some 400-pound guy on a couch. He then went on to claim there was a problem with his microphone. And he's right. Unfortunately, it was turned on. For KZFR Radio, I'm Will Durst.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Ecotopia, and we'll be looking at catastrophes and possible human causes thereof. ¶¶
put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot.